and most important problems facing the country. That is why, in recent years, the main axis of the year's slogan was put on economic issues, so that the government's concentration will be their exit from existing economic problems. The leader's emphasis on economy includes several points. First of all, although the leader is concerned about non-economic issues of the country as well, the Islamic Republic has become powerful enough in these fields in the past 44 years that will not face serious threats. In this regard, leader of the Islamic Revolution said in his New Year 1402 message, "I believe that in 1402, the economy will continue to be the main issue that we should focus on. This is not to say that we do not have other problems. We have various other problems too, such as in the cultural and political fields. However, the main and central issue this year is the issue of the economy. So, if God willing, we are able to reduce the economic problems, and if God willing, our officials make an effort, practice diligence and work hard on important tasks in this field, many of the country's other problems will also be solved." The second point is that economy is the most important field that Iran's enemies have focused on it. Today's enemies' war against the Islamic Republic is a hybrid war. However, in this hybrid war, economy is the base, because the enemy, by exerting economic pressure on Iran, tries in vain to create dissatisfaction among people and spread the dissatisfaction to other fields. In this regard, leader of the Islamic Revolution puts economy as the main axis of the year's slogans in order to eliminate the 200-year-old harms and fortify the internal strength of the system more than ever. As the living condition of people improves, the social capital improves. The relationship between the system and people is strengthened more than ever, and the strategies of the enemies against Iran's economy are foiled.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Martyrdom, sacrifice and commitment. These are words deeply familiar to the Iranian people. They have been under heavy Western pressure and unilateral illegal sanctions since the victory of the Islamic Revolution 44 years ago. The world's powers have used all means to stop Iran from achieving progress, including the assassination of its scientists, specifically those who would have helped the country to make nuclear advancements. The assassinations, which have been orchestrated by the U.S. and implemented by the Israeli regime, have been condemned by many countries around the world. In the capital, Tehran, a gathering was held on Wednesday to commemorate those martyred scientists. The participants say that the Israeli regime does not want a powerful Iran.
We are here on behalf of the people and the country of Bolivia to pay our respects to the martyrs of Iran and all of those who were killed by the imperialist attacks of Israel, which is trying to prevent the progress of the people of Iran and its scientists in the nuclear field for its own interests. We believe that Iran should continue its scientific development in the nuclear field because this issue is important for the progress of any society.
America planted the Zionist regime in the region as a base for the West. For this reason, the West tried from the beginning to make this regime always more advanced than the countries in the region. America and Israel targeted the Islamic Republic, which has been trying to gain power and independence. The independence of the Islamic Republic of Iran angered the West. That is why they try to weaken Iran in any way possible and stop Iranian projects at any level. One of the most important things they tried was assassinations. These assassinations were carried out by Israel Mossad, which is known as the largest terrorist organization in the world.
Iran is a country that, despite international pressure and the assassination of its scientists, has become stronger day by day and has shown that it has never retreated from its ideals and values. Farzaneh Shuryun, Tehran.
People took to the streets of Pakistan to express their solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine who are confronting Israeli atrocities.
Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!
Whoever talks about humanity, they must stand with the Palestinian women, they must stand with the innocent Palestinians who are demanding for their right to defend themselves.
Being a nuclear power, we should stand with Israel, with Palestine, because it's not only the responsibility of Iran, it's the responsibility of all the Muslims.
The International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people has been observed annually on November 29th since 1977, based on a call by the United Nations.
I want to show my solidarity and unity with the people of Gaza and Palestine. I believe that, inshallah, one day the Aqsa and Palestine will be free. Genocide happening in Palestine. Children are being killed. Women are being killed. And I just want to say that we want justice.
In Pakistan, the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian People is marked by various events and ceremonies that reaffirm Pakistan's solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Marking the International Day of Palestine in Pakistan serves as a platform for reinforcing enduring unity between the two nations. It symbolizes a shared commitment to common values such as justice, peace, and realization of the rights of the people of Palestine. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
The Palestinian Embassy in Moscow on Tuesday held a ceremony on the occasion of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. In the meeting, Deputy Foreign Minister Mikhail Bogdanov read a message by President Vladimir Putin to his Palestinian counterpart Mahmoud Abbas on the occasion of the Solidarity Day. The message said the creation of a sovereign Palestine within the 1967 borders is a key condition for resolving the Palestine conflict. According to the Russian diplomat, the Russian Foreign Ministry has engaged in intense efforts to help resolve the humanitarian situation in Gaza through cooperation with Iran and other countries.
From the very beginning, we advocated for a cessation of hostilities in order to channel this unprecedented escalation into political context with the goal to agree on an immediate de-escalation of tension and establish negotiations on humanitarian issues. Our contacts with Iran on Palestine take place at all levels between presidents and foreign ministers. Iran and Russia have powerful positions in the Middle East to help the Palestinians restore their right to self-determination and the creation of a sovereign state.
On the eve of the Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, Moscovites came to the Palestinian embassy and brought toys, flowers, and posters. In 1977, the UN General Assembly decided to observe November 29th annually as the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. On this day, in 1947, the Assembly adopted a resolution on the partition of Palestine.
We are here today in solidarity with our people. For 75 years, Palestinians have suffered under Israeli Zionist occupation. Gaza has become a genocidal site in full view of the world, and no one is doing anything to stop the massacre of Palestinians. We demand our own Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
President Putin called it Russia's sacred duty to help people in Gaza. Since the latest escalation began, Russian aircraft have delivered over 57 tons of humanitarian aid to the population of Gaza. Humanitarian aid is being transferred to representatives of the Egyptian Red Crescent Society, who send it to Gaza.
The International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people coincides with Israel's deadly war in Gaza and its intensified atrocities against the people in the occupied territories. However, the determination of Palestinians to resist the regime's aggression is increasing day by day. Marina Kartonova, Moscow.
Thirty-three Palestinian prisoners, including three female prisoners and 30 minors, have been released by the Israeli occupation authorities after midnight in the fourth batch of the exchange agreement with Hamas movement. The freed prisoners expressed their gratitude to the Palestinian resistance, whom they described as the prisoners' backbone. They added that the resistance will do their utmost to release prisoners, mainly women and minors.
Since the first day of the war, when we knew the resistance took Israelis as prisoners, we knew that we would be free. We have always trusted in the resistance. The resistance, that's the backbone of the prisoners, Al-Quds and all Palestine. We really knew we will be free. Today we're both happy and sad at the same time. Our freedom was achieved, but thousands of Palestinians had been martyred. Their blood is a debt on us. We will not forget this. We ask them to forgive us, and inshallah, all the prisoners will be released.
The majority of the minors had been held under the administrative detention without charge or trial. Those freed minors have talked about how the Israeli soldiers tortured them and how they confiscated all of their belongings, including the radios, so they would not know what was going on outside the prisons or anything about the Israeli war on Gaza.
When the Al-Aqsa flood operation was carried out, we were surprised by soldiers with oppression tools and dogs storming our cells and attacking and beating the prisoners. One of the prisoners from Beit Sira was in a cell next to the cell we were held. He was killed. Did you know about him? He was killed because of the torture, and they didn't offer him any first aid. We're grateful to the resistance. Thanks to Allah for the bless of the resistance and Hamas. Thanks to Allah for the bless of Al-Ghassam, without whom no one would have imagined to be free.
Hours before an initial four-day truce in Gaza Strip was set to expire, Hamas movement confirmed that the humanitarian pause will extend by 2 days. This means more humanitarian aid would be allowed into Gaza, and more captives will be released from both sides.
While the families of thousands of Palestinian prisoners are still hoping their loved ones would be freed, they also hope for the truce to be extended and the Israeli war on Gaza comes to an end. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Jamil, 11 years of age. Salma, 16. Jawan, 2. Muhammad, 13. These are the names of just four Palestinian children who have been slaughtered in Gaza since Israel started bombing the besieged territory on October 7. Their names, together with those of other 5,000 deceased Palestinian boys and girls, were placed on makeshift tombstones and displayed in Esquilino Square in the Italian capital to remember all children killed during Israel's ongoing brutal military assault on Gaza. The initiative, dubbed Stop Slaughtering Children in Gaza, was carried out by AOI, an association of NGOs operating in the international solidarity and cooperation sector, representatives of trade unions and other civil society organizations, together with members of Italy's Palestinian community, attended the demonstration.
You cannot be a member of the United Nations, signing accords and voting resolutions that are enforced only if they suit specific interests. This way, the credibility of the institutions is badly damaged.
Palestinian authorities have reported that more than 6,500 minors have been killed in Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip so far.
Earlier this month, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that Gaza was becoming a graveyard for children, with hundreds of girls and boys killed or injured every day. As 1.6 million Gazans have been displaced from their homes, many forced to move to the south of the Strip, there are concerns that a large number of them may end up in refugee camps.
You know the resilience of the Palestinian people. We will not leave our land. This is our land. This is our right. This was very clear from our people in Gaza. They prefer to live, you know, on their destroyed houses rather than to live outside of Gaza.
Some at the demonstration said an increasing number of people in Italy are choosing to stand with the Palestinians despite the mainstream media coverage of the conflict being completely biased in favor of Israel.
I have stopped following the Western media outlets for quite some time. They should be ashamed. We have the right to be informed honestly and truthfully. Give us the truth, and citizens will then choose which side to stand for. I'm disgusted. These media are all complicit in the mass slaughtering of Palestinians.
Hundreds of demonstrations in solidarity with Palestine have been held in cities and towns across Italy since the start of the war in Gaza over 8 weeks ago. Pro-Palestine rallies were held in Forlì, Ravenna, Cremona, Asti, Reggio Emilia, Genoa and Piacenza last weekend alone. Max Civili, Rome.
Scholars and thinkers have come together in a meeting at Tehran University to review a 2015 letter sent by Iran's leader to the youth in Europe and the United States. The meeting discussed how the leader's vision is finally being materialized in 2023. In the letter written in January of 2015, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei asked young people in the U.S. and Europe to attain first-hand knowledge of Islam. Ayatollah Khamenei asked youngsters not to allow the states to hypocritically introduce their own recruited terrorists as representatives of Islam. He also points out that with the mass development of social media, people can go beyond their geographical borders and try to view different cultures and religions objectively. Such pieces of advice from the leader have once again been brought to attention as the youth around the globe are showing interest in Islam after witnessing the resistance and faith of the Palestinian people in the face of the Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
Instead of money and materialistic possessions, the youth in Western nations can grab onto a more soothing and inclusive philosophy by forming affiliations with Islam.
Some other scholars call the leader's letter a fatherly address, aiming to uproot the xenophobia that oppressive states usually spread in a bid to justify their violence towards the people of a certain land or ethnicity.
The fact is that these letters were seeds that was put on the ground for it to grow and to sort of bring liberation and knowledge and awareness and awakening right across the world, especially with the children, with the youngsters, and youngsters in particular because they are the future. The fact of the matter is that what has happened in the last month and a half since 7th of October reinforced and indeed brought into practice what the letter was trying to achieve. The awakening of people about the fact that Palestinians are the most oppressed and being deliberately massacred in front of our eyes, day in, day out.
Since October 7th, various Western media outlets have tried to justify Israeli crimes in Gaza. Accordingly, they have largely attempted to ignore the vast distress brought upon the 2.3 million people in Gaza in recent weeks. Young people, however, have been taking to the streets in support of Palestine in large numbers after finding out about Israeli atrocities through social media.
One of the main goals behind the letter by the leader of the Islamic Revolution to the Western youth was to bypass Western media that do not present facts to their audience, society, as well as young people in Europe and the United States. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Pro-Palestinian protesters filled the streets of the Yemeni capital to praise the success
of the Palestinian resistance movement and condemned the Israeli regime. Protesters hailed resistance efforts, which they say delivered a humiliating defeat to the Israeli army. Yemenis said they will continue to fight alongside the Palestinians until victory.
We tell the Zionists and the Americans that the Yemeni people who just came out of an eight-year battle and a strangling blockade, that we have put all this aside and are stepping forward to stand with our Palestinian brothers and the Palestinian cause, because it is our main cause. We tell the Palestinians, you are not alone.
The demonstration also praised the Yemeni army's resilience in taking meaningful military actions, which pressured the Israeli regime to accept a ceasefire. Yemeni operations consisted of launching a series of drone and ballistic missiles to occupied Palestine and the latest capture of the Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea.
We will close Bab al-Mandeb and we will seize the Israeli and American ships until they stop the aggression on our Palestinian brothers and the resistance in Gaza. We will strike with missiles and the drones. Our missiles will even target the Zionists inside Gaza so that we can abolish the Israeli entity.
We are here to support our armed forces and the naval and air force and all of their military efforts, including the striking of a U.S. spy drone. We also praise the latest operation, which captured an Israeli ship in the Red Sea. This was a huge blow to the Zionists.
Despite the announcement of a ceasefire agreement in Palestine, the Yemeni army says it will continue its monitoring of the Red Sea to prevent or capture any ships linked to the Israeli regime. The Palestinian resistance has praised the Yemeni army's stance in supporting Palestinians and for taking decisive military actions against the Israeli regime. The Yemeni armed forces spokesperson has also reiterated that attacks against the Israeli entity will continue until the genocide ends. Yusuf Baudi, Sana'a.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
While U.S. inflation has moderated from a year ago, prices remain high across many categories, meaning households aren't feeling much relief. Since February of 2020, the cost of food at home is up more than 24%. Overall, the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar is just one-third of what it used to be 40 years ago. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Bloomberg News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. A Harris poll for Bloomberg News Agency found, despite claiming growth and a purported resilient job market, more middle-class Americans are worried about the state of the economy than a year ago. The rapid increase in interest rates deployed by the U.S. Federal Reserve to rein in inflation are now expected to remain higher for longer. In the Harris poll, the latest in a series taken for Bloomberg News Agency over the past year, 57% of middle-class respondents said higher borrowing costs were having a negative impact on their household finances. Some 44% said they were stressed about the economy, up from 40% a year ago and 39% in March of this year. If the economic story for much of the past 2 years has been the impact of inflation that hit a 40-year high in 2022, a growing part of the pain for U.S. households is the side effects of the U.S. Federal Reserve's medicine. According to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, on credit cards alone, U.S. consumers paid a record $130 billion in interest payments and fees last year. The U.S. economy grew at a 4.9% annual rate in the quarter ending 30th of September, which means the U.S. Federal Reserve may hike interest rates further if that rapid growth doesn't slow as expected and continues to feed inflation. Meanwhile, middle-class consumers see a relentless grind. Rebecca Acuna, a 28-year-old, estimates she's spending $200 more per month on groceries than she did a few years ago and is shouldering a higher utility bill after her provider hiked up prices. The soaring cost of borrowing is deterring her from replacing the car she's been driving for the past 8 years. Rebecca Acuna, a paralegal living in Indianapolis, said, "I could not imagine trying to finance a car with today's interest rates. I'm going to drive my car until the wheels fall off." Among the middle-class people surveyed by the Harris Poll, 61% said their personal financial situation was worse or unchanged from a year ago. Only 12% said they were in a much better circumstance. When asked about the year ahead, just 33% said they expected their own finances to improve. While that was more than the 19% who expect things to get worse, it still points to an electorate that isn't particularly optimistic about pocketbook issues. That presents a major hurdle for President Joe Biden, who fancies himself a champion of the middle class and has been building his case for re-election around a Bidenomics agenda designed to bolster the group he calls the backbone of the country. Tiffany Bond, a 47-year-old family law attorney in Rangeley, Maine, said, "I don't think anyone in office on a state or federal level has any concept of how stressful it is to manage a budget these days." She added, "I think what's happening with interest rates, it can cool the economy, but it really hurts people in the bottom half financially." The opinion poll of 4,166 Americans, including 1,478 middle-class adults, found that three-quarters of the latter group said they were paying more and more for goods and services, while more than two-thirds said higher prices for household essentials like groceries, insurance, and rent or mortgage payments were hurting them. Indeed, while inflation has moderated from a year ago, prices remain high across many categories, meaning American households aren't feeling much relief. Since February of 2020, the cost of food at home is up more than 24%. Overall, the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar is just one-third of what it used to be about 40 years ago. John Gerzema, chief executive officer of the Harris Poll, said, "Economists aren't sitting at kitchen tables with middle-class America. For most, their paychecks are still chasing their bills, and they feel they're falling further and further behind." The website of Fox Business Channel has also covered this same story and tells us more. A slim majority of middle-class Americans surveyed by a recent opinion poll said their wages have been keeping up or exceeding rising household bills. But 63% also said that stagnant wages were hurting their finances. And 42% said their costs were rising faster than their wages. Mary Jacob, a 46-year-old teacher, said she is constantly stressed about her finances, prompting her to resort to frugal tactics like buying groceries in bulk and purchasing furniture on clearance. Mary Jacob said, "If the economy was better, I would put more things on credit, but I'm going back to my more economical choices. My kids are like, 'Soup for a fourth day, Mum? Really?'" When asked what emotions they felt when thinking about the U.S. economy, stress was easily the most selected choice among middle-class respondents. Some of the pessimism appeared to break on partisan and generational lines. About half of middle-class Republicans and independents said they were stressed about the economy, while about one-third of Democrats said they were stressed as well. Roughly 60% of millennials and Democrats said the U.S. economy is working for them, compared to around 30% of baby boomers and Republicans. Tom Maley, a retired optometrist living in Ohio, is one Republican voter who claims he's spending more freely than a year ago. He saw the cross-currents of the current economic moment when one of his sons recently moved from Maryland to Ohio for a better-paying job. Tom Maley, 73 years old, said, "The good news is he got promoted. The bad news is he got relocated with a higher mortgage rate." Maley says his two main concerns for U.S. economy right now are the geopolitics playing out in wars in Ukraine and West Asia, and the higher interest rates that mean cars and housing are basically unaffordable for the middle class.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
People could die from diseases than from bombings in Gaza if the health system there is not put back on its feet quickly. This is a stern warning by the World Health Organization, WHO. Now, Save the Children also saying that the international community's failure to agree on a permanent ceasefire is costing thousands of lives. The truce is in place, with some Israeli violations, of course, but people in Gaza are still dying due to diseases, lack of medical care, etc., not to mention some 7,000 still under rubble. Now, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. And these are our guests in this episode of The Spotlight. Khaled Muammar, activist and commentator in Toronto. Also with us is Daniel Shaw, academic and political commentator in New York. Now, welcome to the show, gentlemen. Beginning with Khaled, the WHO's described the collapse of Al-Shafa Hospital in northern Gaza as a tragedy. It's voiced concerns about the detention of some of its medical staff by Israeli forces. So I want to ask you, on what basis has Israel hit hospitals directly and arrested medical staff?
Well, what we should understand is that there are about 35 hospitals in Gaza which are not only dealing with patients, but also sheltering about 120,000 internally displaced Palestinians who were forced to move because their homes were destroyed or Israel forced them to leave. And now they are being forced to leave the hospitals, which shows that Israel's intention is ultimately to ethnically cleanse not only northern Gaza by moving people into the southern part of Gaza, but also to finally attempt to ethnically cleanse even the people in southern Gaza, because it's being bombarded constantly. The hospitals there are also targeted. And at present, 27 of these 35 hospitals in Gaza are damaged and not operating. So you can see people who are sick or people who will become sick because of the contaminated water and other diseases which are spreading, the white phosphorus which cause injuries, all of these people will find no place to be treated, and they are being pushed further into the southern part of Gaza. And Israel hopes that in the end, Egypt might open the borders and allow them into Sinai, even though Egypt has said clearly, we will not allow this.
But the Palestinians are not going there either.
Yeah. This is okay.
All right, Daniel, you know, hospitals, especially those in the northern part of Gaza, are being ignored fuel. And when I talk to our correspondent there on the ground, he says fuel here means fuel equals life. You know, because, you know, medical equipment, machines, they all run on electricity, and they don't have electricity. They use generators. Generators run on fuel. And this truce is in place. It's got extended for 2 days. So aid is trickling in, a drop in the ocean, of course. But fuel, hospitals are being ignored with fuel. How come?
Because the Israeli plan from the beginning, for the past 75 years and for the past 53 days in particular, has been the complete annihilation of life in Gaza. They want to push all Palestinians into the Sinai Peninsula. They want to continue to displace. This is a 75-year project of dispossession, of displacement. These are genocidal intentions, and that's why shame on CNN and shame on Fox News and the full gamut of media outlets in the mainstream here in the West who have continued to vilify hospitals. And what's extremely sad is that much of the medical staff, as they receive hundreds and hundreds and thousands of children and civilians who need help, the medical staff is checking if it's their families and how many medical workers. At this point, over 105 UN workers have been killed in Gaza. And over 53 journalists, so we can see that the Israeli regime has absolutely no respect for life.
Exactly. So, Khaled, how could this humanitarian catastrophe, in the real sense of the word, caused in Gaza be compensated? Is the damage done reparable in any way?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about structures which were destroyed, they can be fixed with money if the money comes from certain rich Arab countries and the United Nations. But, you know, the lives of all these people, especially the children who were traumatized, you know, you have to remember many of them, about 625,000 children, have not been going to school for the last 7 weeks. Many of them are injured. They have lost their parents. Some of them are sick. And this trauma that they went through, it's going to take a long time to overcome that and lead a normal life. So this is a terrible humanitarian crime. And as the Undersecretary General of the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs said, Martin Griffiths, he said, never in his life, and he's been working with the United Nations since the time of Cambodia, he said, I've never seen so much injustice and suffering and carnage. And that has to stop. And even if it stopped now, you still have the problem of fixing these human souls which were affected, especially the children.
Yeah, truly. Daniel, another damage done to Gaza during this recent Israeli war, $1.6 million of losses a day in Gaza's agricultural produce. You know, this is a result of a halt in production due to the war on Gaza. And, you know, even this is not possible because of the contamination that Khaled also mentioned, as UN was also warning about. So they cannot have their produce maybe for years. So this is a big blow again to their economy.
This is the same policy that the U.S. government used for 13 genocidal years from 1962 to 1975. against the Vietnamese people. The plan of genocide is a total plan in the sense that there's an economic blockade. It's an all-out assault on survival in Gaza to attack agriculture. The little bit of agriculture that still existed, because most of us here in the West have no sense that Gaza had already been through, is just emerging from 2 decades of full-scale Israeli and U.S. Blockade. There's only 2 ways in and out of Gaza, which are completely monitored and patrolled by the IDF, by the forces of apartheid and occupation. And that's why here in the West, no one could ever have a sense that October 7th, as tragic as it was, represented a massive prison break of 2.3 million human beings that have been treated in apartheid-like conditions, that have been ethnically cleansed now for 75 years. And of course, it was an act of resistance, but because of the lack of education and context here in the West, we really don't have a sense of what's been transpiring in the past 53 days and 75 years.
Right. And Khaled, you know, there are many more problems caused by the war in Gaza. You know, we mentioned some of them. There are some other, like unexploded ordnance. You know, they're unexploded and they're a threat to everybody, especially kids. The sewage system is in tatters. There's contamination in water, as you also mentioned. Diseases are spreading. So, what does it take to make up for all this destruction and loss of life?
It's going to take an insurmountable amount of help from the international community. And unfortunately, we cannot count on countries which are supporting Israel, like the United States and even some European countries and Canada, because the damage that was done to the infrastructure, to the hospitals, the schools, the clinics, all of that is going to take lots of time and effort. And we are not sure at this moment who's going to step in and make up for that. And it's going to take a long time for this to take place. So this is really a crisis, not only for Gaza, it's a crisis for humanity, that this was allowed to go on for 50 days without any interruption, even though the United Nations was calling for a ceasefire from the start, even though the public in many of these countries who supported Israel, like Canada, United States, the UK, the public was calling for a ceasefire, but the politicians seem to listen to another master, and this is what is so criminal, you know, about this whole situation, is that it was allowed to last that long, and the victims will be the population of Gaza. The same thing happened, by the way, in 1948, and I suffered that. I was living in Haifa City at that time. It had a population of 70,000 Palestinian Arabs. Only 2,000 remained after the creation of Israel. Right. We ended up as refugee camps, and we suffered, and some of us are still suffering in refugee camps. Right. I was lucky enough to find my way to Canada. But, you know, we have 2-3 generations who have suffered from the catastrophe of 1948. And the same thing will happen for the people of Gaza. 2 or 3 generations will suffer until the root cause of all the violence is ended, which is an apartheid settler colonial regime, which believes that they are supremacists, the same way that the white Afrikaners believed in South Africa. And that came to an end when sanctions were imposed on apartheid South Africa and the apartheid regime was dismantled. And this is the only solution to the crisis in Palestine.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Daniel, U.S. and Israeli spy chiefs are in Doha, Qatar. They're there for talks on extending the so-called humanitarian pause. You know, we had the first initial one 4 days, and then yesterday it got extended for 2 days. So Wednesday it will come to an end. So what do you expect to happen next?
There's no sign within the ruling summits of the United States when one looks at the mouthpieces of the ruling class, when one read CNN and the New York Times, there's small murmurs of humanitarian concern, but the U.S. intelligence cabal and the Pentagon and the State Department and the true ruling class and the foreign policy establishment continue to control all of the information. Plastered across the front pages of the news are just horrific stories of what the Israelis have been through. So the ongoing dehumanization of the Palestinians continues. Now you have the BRICS 11, who have formed the Gaza Contact Group. Xi Jinping and other world leaders have said there has to be a two-state solution. But the problem is that this truly international community, because we can't say that the U.S., Canada, and the other neocolonial powers, they are the antithesis of a community, and they have nothing to do with internationalism. But the BRICS 11, we have to understand that Palestine can only imagine reparations and true rebuilding and justice and a return to the 1948 land that was stolen from them within the context of a multipolar world with China and Russia and South Africa and Brazil and India. And these countries truly have a say, along with the Muslim countries. Right now, the powers that be have turned their back on Gaza, leaving 2.3 million people to survive on their own, including 1.1 million children. But certainly, yes, reparations will be in order, directly connected to the rise of multipolarity throughout the world.
Okay. Khaled, what's the prospect of a lasting ceasefire? That's what Palestinians and many others are asking for, even an end to the Israeli aggression occupation against Palestinians. You know, today the Palestinian envoy to the UN said that Tel Aviv wants us to either surrender and subjugate or die.
Well, you know, the many Israeli officials have been stating over the last few days that the aim is to really get rid of all these human animals. And they mean by that not only Hamas, they mean the Palestinian population. Gaza, because of this big concentration of 2 million people who have risen up and resisted this inhumane siege, which has been going on since 2006, had to be taught a lesson, because if they are not taught the lesson, then the people in the West Bank and in Israel proper, the Palestinians in Israel proper, would then demand their freedom, equality, and justice, including the right of return of refugees. However, as long as the United States is backing this apartheid genocidal regime, and they have just mentioned recently that they're going to resupply Israel with bombing material, and by the way, these bombs, 2,000-pound bombs, have never been used before in any residential neighborhood before. And they are the cause of this huge damage, which will take a very long time to fix. The Americans still insist on supplying Israel, which means they are encouraging the government of Israel to continue in its mission, which they have stated publicly, that they will eliminate anybody in Gaza who poses a threat to them. And by that, they mean actually any Palestinian. The right. presence of Palestinians will always be a threat to Israel's hegemony and racism, which they have been practicing for the last 75 years. So this is going to be a tough struggle, especially since the backing from Arab countries and Muslim countries has only been verbal, but there's really no practical way or action undertaken so far to support the resistance and the people of Gaza.
Now, Daniel, the Iranian foreign minister has sent letters to the ICC urging a prompt investigation and prosecution of Israeli war criminals. What kind of performance do you expect of this international tribunal? Would it prove to sit on the fence, be impartial and independent, and resist all the pressure?
Very, very difficult. I think that would be wishful thinking again in this era dominated by U.S. unipolarity, U.S. dominant hegemony throughout the world. The ICC, the United Nations, these things have existed as fig leaves. They're small international camouflages, so the U.S. can continue to try to dominate throughout the world. I think it's really only the world's people that can stop this genocide in motion. We see massive resistance across the world, civil disobedience led by our Jewish sisters and brothers here in the United States, and of course, Palestinian resistance. We're doing everything we can, but we have a U.S. public that has been exposed to lies that equate the Palestinians with terrorism for 75 years. So it's really an unequal informational war as well. It's important to highlight that the South Africans have invoked the Geneva Convention along with other governments. But it's important to say that Israel is a fascist state. In this country where they claim to care about racism and xenophobia, Israel has one type of quote-unquote democracy for its Jewish citizens, and then the Palestinians can't even be called second or third class citizens. They've been defined and treated as subhuman now for 75 years. And how horrific that it takes a near genocide or a genocide in motion to wake up the U.S. population to the reality of Israeli fascism.
Okay, and of course they're waking up. You see the rallies there. Okay, thank you so much, gentlemen, for the contribution. Khaled Mamer, activist and commentator in Toronto. Daniel Shaw, academic and political commentator in New York.
Thank you.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.